We move to the fourth case. Fourth case, United States versus Ford.
She was a PD in Indianapolis.
Thank you. The first issue I would like to go over is the violation of the client's constitutional right to be aware of the mandatory minimum at the time of the entry of the plea agreement. In my brief, I specified that there was no indication from the magistrate that he told the defendant of a mandatory minimum. The government says that that's not true, that he did go over at least, or he said in his colloquy with the defendant that at least you get 5 years or at least you get 10 years. And I think that clearly is insufficient as a matter of law.
Are you saying he must use the term mandatory minimum?
No. No, not at all.
Because I'm wondering whether that would really mean any more to a defendant than 5 to 20.
I think it's critically important that the defendant is aware at the time of the plea agreement that there is a mandatory minimum.
What would he be aware of if the plea agreement itself says
right.
mandatory minimum?
But the
right?
record
it says that, right?
Yes, that's
so
correct.
He's aware of what's in
and
there.
And I'm
right?
going to go over
and
that.
And the magistrate judge doesn't use a figure of below 5 years, does he?
I'm sorry.
The magistrate judge doesn't suggest in his statement
no.
that it could be a sentence of less than 5 years.
No.
In fact,
he tells him he can't give him less than 5 years.
I don't believe he says that.
I think
he right. says at least. Well, he uses the word at least 5 years.
At least
well,
five.
Then that would be the same
but,
thing.
That seems, but.
Yeah, that just seems like another way of saying mandatory minimum, at least well, 5 years.
I think the record, this is a constitutional right. I believe the
it's
record.
It's a constitutional right to have it done in specific language?
No, yet. No. I think it's a constitutional right that the record would reflect that he's aware of the mandatory minimum. And he goes over all the mandatory minimums. He has one prior or two priors. He's not saying specifically your mandatory minimum is 5 years.
It is not less than 5 years and up to 20 years imprisonment. Where's the constitutional deficit in that?
He goes on and says if you have one conviction, it could be 10 years. I think the record is clearly void of him understanding the rights of the mandatory minimum. Also, I think we need to get to the harmless error issue that he did not understand his rights, that there was no plea agreement here. There was no indication from any of the record that he had a mandatory minimum, except for that one statement by the magistrate. I think that, as a matter of law, is insufficient.
Well, he wasn't advised when he initially appeared on the charge of the potential penalty.
I can't answer that. I wasn't
well,
his attorney.
Aren't defendants routinely at their arraignment or whatever it's called, initial appearance, told what the penalties are?
That's possible, but the government didn't respond. We didn't get the transcript. I was not his original attorney, so I was not present at that time.
Well, it seems to me that mandatory minimum, what does that mean in this case?
Well, it was 5 years.
Well, how do we know that? The judge actually said, I can't give you less than 5 years. Mandatory minimum doesn't mean much standing alone.
That's correct, Judge. But it could have been more. It could have been, the defendant could have thought that there was some indication that he wasn't going to get 5 years.
Wait a minute. When the magistrate judge says not less than 5 years, how could any reasoning person think it could be less than 5 years?
Well, there are different safety valves that he may have thought was involved. I think we need to remand. I'm not asking for a complete reversal on this issue. I'm asking for a remand so that the court can determine whether or not he would not have pled guilty if he didn't know about the mandatory minimum. Getting to my second issue, which deals with
And so he did not object before Judge Mim to the advice, the colloquy that he was given on his potential penalties.
This would be harmless error. That's correct. It was not brought up at the trial level by myself until after I received the transcript of the plea agreement, which was late. So it is harmless error. The issue as to whether or not he would have changed his mind if he knew about it, I think, needs to be determined by the district court. The second issue deals with the ineffective assistance of counsel pursuant to Strickland.
And this by is, pursuing that here, yeah. You're not here on 2255? Or?
No. No, it's a direct appeal.
So if we address that, then that's his last opportunity to raise that issue?
That would be correct.
And he's aware of that. You've advised him?
Yes, I've advised him.
He wishes to pursue it on this record?
Yes. The second issue deals with the ineffective assistance of counsel, and really we're looking at one specific incident, and that is that he testified at the motion to vacate the guilty plea that he was coerced into pleading guilty. His testimony is kind of vague as to the reasons for his potential reversal because of the ineffective, but he was clear that his attorney told him that it was possible that they could have done additional charges, up to 115 charges with 5 years apiece for each charge. And in his opinion, he thought he was looking at life imprisonment. His mother also testified to the same fact.
So he must have known something about that 5-year minimum.
Well, that's correct. I'm not disputing that.
Kind of runs into your other argument.
It does run, but I think clearly on the totality of the circumstance, he would not have pled guilty unless he was not coerced into pleading guilty because he thought he was looking at life imprisonment. I would not believe my client specifically because he has questions as to his believability and why he testifies. But his mother also testified that she was in the lawyer's office. And it was her belief that he was looking at over 600 years or life. The lawyer said he didn't remember discussing that specific point. The judges, the district judge's position was, well, he has a right to say that there are potentially new charges coming because that happens. But I think this is way beyond that fact, that once you say you're looking at potential life when your guideline range is somewhere 120 months, I think is ineffective per se. You go into the totality of the circumstances. He tried to relieve his lawyer like 2 months prior to the guilty plea. The judge says, no, you have to have trust in your lawyer. He asked for all these other types of things to be done, motion to suppress, psychological evidence. That was all denied by his lawyer. I think under the totality of the circumstance that this defendant was basically, it was not voluntary when he pled guilty. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Daniels.
And please, the court, counsel. My name is Greg Weddle. I'm representing the United States today. Getting to defendant's first point as to whether he was advised at his change of plea hearing that there was a minimum mandatory sentence. I think Judge Tinder gets it exactly right. I mean, what other language could be used which would convey that other than you are facing, as the magistrate judge said, no less than 5 years? And while we have to look at what the Rule 11 colloquy what happened at the colloquy, I think we can discern the defendant's understanding at that time and at all later times by looking at exactly what the defendant testified to at the hearing on his motion to vacate his guilty plea. And on page 10 of that transcript, the court asked, what did your lawyer tell you was a possible sentence that you could receive if you did not plead guilty to the charges? He told me that it was possible to receive that. The court says, receive what? The defendant answers, 5 years minimum each. The court says, I'm sorry, 5 years, I can't understand you. 5 years what? And here's the critical line, 5 years mandatory minimums for each count of receipt. Clearly, the defendant understood that at his Rule 11 colloquy, not less than 5 years meant, in his own mind, with his own words, minimum mandatory 5 years.
He,
I think
he
that's
pled to one count of
receipt. Yes, Your Honor.
And that was relative to one download of child pornography. Is that right?
Correct.
Was there evidence of other downloads?
There was evidence of 114 other downloads.
At separate times?
At separate times, according to the testimony of the investigator.
And was that information made available to his first counsel?
It was. It was part of the discovery. And so Mr. Alvarado, his first appointed counsel, knew that and advised him.
Did your office threaten, and I don't mean that in a harsh way, but suggest that you might file charges in those other 114 downloads?
I was not trial counsel. I don't know that there's any record of there being any threats of that. Mr. Alvarado did not suggest that that had been threatened by the government. I think his testimony, Mr. Alvarado's testimony at the hearing, and what the district court found at that hearing was that Mr. Alvarado told him that there were other potential charges, and that if he did not plead guilty to this charge, there was a possibility that that a superseding indictment could be returned and he could be charged with other counts. But I don't think there's any evidence that that was a specific threat, or that Mr. Alvarado told him that was a specific threat. Nor is there any evidence that Mr. Alvarado, other than the defendant's testimony after the fact, that he was facing consecutive minimum mandatory sentencings, which would result in the defendant's words, and this is why the defendant's testimony is to, I think, not to be taken as credible. In the defendant's words, at one point he says he was facing an amount of if he had been charged with other offenses, it would be close to life. But then later on, he's suggesting that what he was told was that he would get 5 years consecutive minimum mandatory for each of 114 counts, which would be 500 or 600 years or whatever. That's certainly more than close to life. So I think that the evidence is clear that on two counts here, that first of all, the defendant was aware that he was facing a statutory minimum 5 years for the one receipt he was pleading guilty to, and secondly, that he really did not apprehend that if he didn't plead guilty, that he was necessarily going to receive a sentence of close to life imprisonment. Mr. Alvarado testified to that. The district court found that to be credible and accurate, and this court is to accord that finding a great deal of discretion. And unless the court has any further questions, we would ask that the district court's denial of the defendant's motion to vacate his guilty plea be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel. How much time? You have 2 minutes, Mr. Daniel.
Thank you, Judge. I don't believe that the court found that to be true at the motion to vacate, and I would agree with the government that if it was just the defendant who said, I'm looking at potentially life, that probably would be questionable. But if you look at the transcript, his mother was present with him. She said, yes, I thought he was looking at life, and we pushed him to plead guilty. And one of the issues that he brought up was that he had pressure from his family, he had pressure from his lawyer, and that is validated with his mother's testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Daniels. Mr. Daniels, you took this case by appointment as well?
Correct.
Again, the court appreciates and couldn't function unless we had lawyers like you who are willing to take these cases. Thank you very much.
Thank you.